Hello and welcome to this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday, January the 8th, the second show of the new year, as we listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. We just got through all of the holiday shows. I did a couple of repeat broadcasts of the best of the year, and now we're ready to start with new shows, a new season, and first out of the belt, City Theater of Independence, where they are doing the Tennessee Williams classic, The Glass Menagerie. Here to tell us all about it, two people of great importance to the show. Cece McFarlane is with us. She is the director for City Theater. She initially told me this was her first real directing experience in the Kansas City area, but then I got out of her that she had previously directed in Rochester, New York. So an experienced director nonetheless. Thank you, and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Nancy Effort is with us again once as well. Nancy's been with us several times. She's just a wealth of information. She appears as an actress in this show. She has appeared previously as a director in shows, as a member of nationally known community theater associations. We've talked about that at great length. And she is here. She's playing the role of Amanda in the show The Glass Menagerie. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you both with us.
Thank you, Michael.
The Glass Menagerie. People have conceptions of the show. They know it's a Tennessee Williams show. Opinions have ranged from, oh, what a sad story, to what a classic work of art by Tennessee Williams. Your thoughts?
Those two things aren't necessarily exclusive. It can be a sad story as well as a classic work of art. One of the things I found interesting is actually how much I laugh during rehearsals. There is a delightful awkwardness to a lot of moments in this show that I think a lot of people will be able to relate to, a lot of family situations. Being a memory play, it's not strictly realistic, but it's also not heavily symbolic in a way that's inaccessible.
I think you should explain for the audience what you mean by a memory play. She's a PhD, folks. I should have mentioned that. A PhD in theater, so I need it explained to me as well.
By being a memory play, it is explicitly one character's memory of events from his past. So we start off with Tom as the narrator, who talks directly to the audience and explains some of the background of the play to the audience. And then he steps into scenes and steps out of scenes as things progress and tells us a little bit about what happens or why it happened. But being a memory play, it really means that it doesn't necessarily follow strict logic or a complete progression of time. There are jumps. So between some scenes, there are months, and between other scenes, there are just a few minutes.
I know some people who knew Tennessee Williams, and they tell me that he told them Tom is actually him.
Yeah, I think that's an inescapable conclusion, that Tom is Tennessee Williams and Laura is his sister, who was named Rose, and Amanda is his mother, although stories are that she did not see herself in the play at all when she went to see it.
I see. Well, people don't often recognize themselves for whatever reasons.
True.
Well, let's talk to Nancy Appert. She's playing the role of Amanda. Your character, how your character, the mother, fits into the play.
How does Amanda fit in? It's all about her, in a way, because Tom's life is one of constantly seeking for escape, but yet he feels bound to stay and take care of his mother and his sister. And Amanda lives in her dreams. She lives in those memories. And to create the anchor for the family through all that emotional upheaval and just trying to maintain from day to day and maintain that family and her hopes and her dreams for her children, like so many other parents, even today, they don't quite get fulfilled. And it's very frustrating. But yet, she keeps that that hope. She keeps that that gaiety that she talks about. She keeps that rejuvenated hope all the time until it's completely dashed. But then, you know, it's almost like she just will not give up. She just won't. No matter how many times she gets knocked down or the children get knocked down, she's right there to find another solution, another to face that other challenge.
Yeah, we've talked previously about things. This was one of the shows that was on your bucket list. Tell me why.
Okay. Because first it's Tennessee Williams and his literature. And as challenged as I am by some of the word usage, it's once I can feel the emotion behind it, it's such a beautiful language that Tennessee has put out there. Also, to play a type of woman who is a survivor, who is a dominant within her children's lives and in the community, as it were, but never giving up on those hopes. But I think one of the biggest challenges is having to live that role as interpreted through Tom. And so that's what we've really worked on, is not only the individual interpretation of the character, but constantly filtering that and bringing Tom's impressions through our dialogue and our actions.
Yeah, well, you know, he would see his mother probably differently than even she would see herself, correct?
Right. Yeah, it's we talked about it a lot in early rehearsals and haven't talked about it as much lately, but how, because this is Tom's memory of events, everything is seen through him. So it's the gentleness of his sister. Was she really so gentle? Was she really like this? It's how he remembers her. So those things that he finds important or that he found irritating are heightened because none of these characters are realistic, with the exception of the gentleman caller, who even he is not actually realistic.
Now, I've been a gentleman caller in my life, strange as that may seem. I shouldn't say never, but it's rare that you see a family situation where everything revolved around this event that was coming up. Mm. Why does this family act the way they do?
Well, because Laura doesn't have the ability to make it on her own, and this was during the Depression, and Laura is not cut out for anything that gets her out into public. She doesn't have opportunities to meet people. Her marriage prospects are very limited.
Why do they think that way? The family has property?
The family does not have property.
Oh, okay.
The family has almost nothing. And Tom wants to leave. He has the heart of a roamer, so he doesn't want to stay put and take care of his mother and sister. Amanda works, which was not common for her social class at the time, so she has fallen far from where she started. And Laura's really only hope of having a life is to find someone to marry her. And unfortunately, knowing that this is a biographical play, we know that Tennessee Williams' mother eventually had his sister committed and did not find other solutions.
Do you want the audience to know that before they see the show? Would it be better if they didn't?
It would probably be better if they didn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it doesn't directly tie into anything in the production.
This doesn't sound like her mother had enough confidence in her. People change. People are, I hate to use the expression of wallflowers, but sometimes they are. That can change.
Sometimes, yes. I don't see that in any version of Laura, though. She doesn't want to change.
In past versions of the show I've seen, it's always not necessarily lavishly decorated, but a well-decorated place. So I was really not all that aware that they were as impoverished as they were, which of course leads to the question of set pieces. You're doing it period.
We are. We're doing it period. It's an apartment in St. Louis in the 30s, and they have to scrape together money for everything that they talk about doing. So our set is not going to be lavishly decorated. There are some hints of Amanda's past, of the wealth that the family used to have. But Amanda's been a single parent for 16 years, and Tom doesn't make a whole lot of money, and Laura doesn't make any money. So there's a shabbiness that they're trying to hide.
I see. Tell me about the cast. Let's talk about the cast. You have Nancy here. She plays the role of Amanda. Why did you pick Nancy for Amanda?
Because she did a brilliant job at auditions. Everybody in the cast did a fantastic job in auditions. They filled what I was looking for when I didn't necessarily walk in with a specific, this is what I'm looking for. They did a great job of embodying those characteristics that I wanted to see represented on the stage.
Now let's talk about her daughter. From the what you've described, a difficult role to play and probably to cast as well.
Yes, she's delicate but has a strength that I think some productions overlook. And she has a physical defect that is not specified, although she wore a brace earlier in her life. So most productions have her limping. I've seen some where she's in a wheelchair. We have a slight limp because it's, as I said, it's Tom's memory, and he doesn't remember her with a severe disability.
Well, that probably leads me to believe that the disability that Mother may have thought was there really wasn't there that much.
That's possible.
Yeah. We're speaking with the director, Cece McFarlane, and the lead actress, Nancy Eppert, in the City Theater of Independence production of The Glass Menagerie. It opens up this Thursday, the 11th of January at 7:30 p.m., two weekends for the show, Friday the 12th at 7:30, Saturday the 13th at 7:30 as well. That is preceded by each show has a dinner theater aspect, and that is this Saturday the 13th, so dinner would probably be at 6 or 6:30. The show would then start at around 7:30 p.m. The number to call for more information is 816-325-7367, and the website is citytheaterofindependence.org. Performances are always in the historic Roger T. Sermon Community Center, located at 201 North Dodgen in Independence. That is essentially the intersection of Truman and Nolan Roads in Independence, where things tend to happen at that intersection. There's a very famous spring there at that area. Independence was known as the City of Springs, of course, but before it was called Independence, in fact, way back then. Very historic area, of course. And the show will open on Thursday the 11th. Are you anticipating the opening, Cece?
Oh, yes. I'm very excited.
What's been the biggest challenge for you so far in this process?
Probably working with a new theater company. Every time a director works with a company that they don't have previous experience with, there's kind of a steep learning curve as you figure out the answers to all of the questions. Where are rehearsals? When can rehearsals be? Who needs to be there? Who communicates with the board? Who does what? I mean, there are a lot of things unrelated to the actual process in rehearsals that the theater company controls, from what's the budget to who buys props.
The director has to consider all the
Yes.
That's why you have the PhD.
That's right. That's why we have a PhD doing shows like that.
Well, the PhD is very academic, so it doesn't necessarily help much in working with the board of a new theater.
But did you still have to write a dissertation, even though it was theater? What was the subject?
I wrote a scholarly personal narrative about feminist directing in academia.
Ah. Is academia much different from community theater?
In some respects, yes. But in some respects, no. In some ways, directing is directing.
I would think in academia, you're pretty much limited to the students in the program.
Yes.
Here, you could have anyone from the community. You could have a very experienced person. You could have some very inexperienced people that you would have to mold. Which would you rather have?
I would rather have experienced, so long as they're still open-minded. Some actors have always worked in one particular way, and it's probably not the way that I work. And so I need a certain amount of flexibility from my actors so that they will go with me and trust that my process gets us to a good product.
Sure. Let's talk about the other performers in the show. Then I want to ask you about your process. See how different that is. Who plays the role of the daughter?
Abby Briscoe.
Mm-hmm. Is she new to community theater now? Very experienced?
Abby just played Myrtle May in Harvey.
Oh, I see.
Earlier this year. And she also has done, I think, some other things. Yes, she did The Return to the Forbidden Planet for City Theater as well.
Yeah. Both comedies. And this is a very serious role for her.
Yes, although, like I said, there's a lot more laughter than I originally expected there to be.
Now, the show also revolves around Tom. He is the teller of the story. But he's also a character in the story.
He is. And that role is played by Khalid Johnson, who is not new to CTI.
No, actually, it's interesting because the last time Khalid and I were on stage together, it was the trip to Bountiful.
Oh.
I played his mother.
Yes.
He, of course, my son. But we were the nice mommy and son. We have a little challenges with our relationship in
one. So. Well, there were some disagreements on the road to Bountiful, as I recall.
Yeah, he just didn't love me as much as his wife. That was the problem.
Sometimes real life steps in there and gets involved, doesn't it?
Yes, but this is theater, so we can overlook some of those real things.
Now, this mysterious gentleman caller who, unbeknownst to him, has a lot of pressure on him. A lot seems to be riding on whether he likes her and likes the family and all of that. How does that fit in?
How does it fit in?
Sure.
Well, Jim comes to dinner not even knowing that Laura exists. So
he doesn't know
that he's there as a date. And I don't want to give away what happens, but things don't go well.
I see. Well, this sometimes happens.
It does. It does. But they definitely click. He and Laura definitely click. And there's a connection there that missing that connection, I think, is heartbreaking.
Well,
it's the heartbreaking aspect of the show.
Yes, I would think so. Yeah. Some people refer to it as a very sad play. Others, from what you said earlier, they think of it as a very in-depth examination, but not necessarily sad. My reaction was always sad.
I think that some audience members will find it very sad, and some audience members will find it a little too close to home if they come from a dysfunctional family, which most families, I think, are dysfunctional in some way or another.
Oh, I would think every family in some way is dysfunctional.
I do want to say that the gentleman caller, Jim, is played by Alex Adams.
Sounds like that might be one of the difficult roles in the show, of course.
It is. Actually, all of the roles are challenging, and all of the roles are key. So I don't think that there is one lead. It's very much an ensemble piece, which feels a little strange because the gentleman caller isn't even in Act One, but it's still very much an ensemble piece. Every one of those actors needs to be dead on and really strong, and I lucked into getting just that without knowing what any of these four were capable of when I cast them.
Yeah, now let's have fun and speculate a little bit. Why do you think Tennessee wanted to reveal this about his family?
I think that he was haunted by his memory of his sister, and this was his way of exploring that relationship and why he made some of the choices that he made. It may also have been a bit of an apology and a bit of an homage to her.
And how does Nancy feel about her character, the way she relates to her daughter? You have a daughter.
I do. And a son.
And a son.
I know. With Amanda, it is really, going back to the humorous parts of this, there's such great pearls and great pieces of gold to be mined throughout this, in that there is, you have to have that balance. Make good drama, you have to have it sandwiched on the other side with some levity. And I think that's what Tennessee put in there. And it's unfortunate that some casts, some directors don't allow that and play that. And I've been so very honored and pleased to work with CeCe, because it's been a great opportunity as an actor to work with a director that will explore and to listen to new ideas. And I've appreciated that so very much. But as me connecting to Amanda, it really is a lot to me. There's a lot of things that Amanda talks about that I have, you know, quick memories of or similar situations, and it's cathartic. And I think that's what maybe in a small piece that Tennessee Williams was doing with Tom. It was so cathartic for him to finally get this out and to give it to somebody else and to give it to all of us for, I mean, goodness sakes, how long is this? I mean, decades, literally decades that this show plays all the time, all over. Our dramaturg told us that there's usually every day a production of Glass Menagerie opening somewhere in the world, if I'm quoting him correctly, I hope. And that's very telling about a piece of literature, especially theater, that it means so much to so many people in so many different levels and so many different languages, obviously. Unless they're playing it in English, which I think is amazing, but as being able to take this character and bring this character alive on stage, it's been a total honor and privilege to do that.
It was on your bucket list.
It is. It's check marked. Okay. The next one. I'm just putting this out there. Okay, Hedda Gabler. Just putting it out there. Just putting it out.
Someone will undoubtedly do that soon.
I'm right here. You can get my number through Michael.
Sure. The Tennessee Williams Classic, The Glass Menagerie, opens this Thursday, the 11th at 7:30 at City Theater of Independence. Runs essentially two weekends. First weekend, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, with the Diener Theater proceeding on Saturday. And then the next weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Sunday's performance is a 2 o'clock matinee. The number to call is 816-325-7367. The Sermon Center is located, they actually have an address, 201 North Dodgen in Independence. And if you MapQuest, you need the zip code 64050. But it is essentially the intersection of Truman and Nolan Roads in Independence. The website is citytheaterofindependence.org. It opens this Thursday at City Theater in Independence. You come to us, CC, from Rochester. Where did you obtain your PhD?
I actually received my PhD from the University of Missouri, Columbia.
Huh. Well, I wasn't there. I can't knock that.
I'm from Rochester, New York. I grew up there. And then my master's is from Villanova University in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. I came out to Missouri for my PhD, and then I went back to the East Coast for a few years, and then moved back out here last year.
I ask in a joking way, of course, but the sports fans in Philadelphia are known for their booing. Does that also carry over to theatrical productions
no,
as well?
No, well, no.
They don't boo from the first
round? They do not. Well, I should say, nothing I ever directed in Philly was booed.
Okay. But they are known for that.
I didn't know. I that's terrible sportsmanship.
Oh, no, that's fine.
In my opinion.
We have to have levity here on the Arts Magazine Show. We're talking about such a heavy subject, and it is a rather heavy play.
It is,
It
yes.
really is. Nancy is a member of nationally known community theater associations.
The American Association of Community Theater.
What do they do, Nancy?
What do we do? The American Association of Community Theater is actually the umbrella association for community theater in the country and in Europe. Especially the Europe, we've used the army bases where they have their theater companies. But my position right now on the board is the Region 5 representative, which is huge. It's North and South Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa and Nebraska, Kansas and Missouri, and just making sure that community theater have a resource and have a fraternity, as you will, to help and support and keep the best practices going in community theater.
There's a famous painting I've seen. It was in Westport a few years ago, but it was a depiction of the way an East Coast person looks at the rest of the country. The East Coast covered, the first third of the map. Then the Mississippi River and everything in between was all smudged into a little third in the middle. Then the West Coast was the other whole third for the rest of the country. That's the way they look at it. You know, you cross to New Jersey, and after that, there's nothing until you get to California. And I'd always find that so humorous.
People at least need to get out of their houses more.
I found it so humorous at the time, but it also rung true a little bit. Now, you're from New York, but you studied in Missouri. Was that culture shock for you?
In some respects, it was. Going from Philadelphia, and then I was in Rochester for 1 year, and then Columbia, Missouri, was a little bit of a culture shock. Although I would say that Columbia is not representative of the entire state, just like St. Louis and Kansas City are not representative of the entire state. it was tough to hear some of the comments that people make that aren't necessarily acceptable on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to get into political conversations. It was a bit of a culture shock. And recently someone told me that I had lost my New York accent. It wasn't until a little bit later that I realized that they were expecting me to have an accent from New York City. That painting says that East Coasters don't see anything between the East Coast and the West Coast, a lot of people don't see any part of New York except for New York City.
Well, sure.
And I lived very far from New York City.
And from the people I know from New York City, they probably look down a little bit on Rochester as well.
Oh, I'm sure that they do. I'm sure. But I guess because I had family living in Pennsylvania and family living in California, and now one of my brothers lives in India, I've always seen the world as being way more than just my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I think anybody involved in theater should, at least, want to explore the differences between people and the differences of culture and outlook and what it means to be human. And one of the things that I love about directing is directing things that teach us how to be better human beings, even if it's by looking at someone else's life and just reflecting on what you might do in that situation.
I've met most of the actors here in town, and some of them are from New York. And they always come here with certain expectations, but then they find they want to stay here and work here because they like it. Some even say they like it better than they liked it in New York City. Why do you think that that would be? I realize that's an individual discussion, but...
Well, never having lived in New York City, I couldn't tell you. I've lived in Rochester, New York, and it's a smaller city than Kansas City. There's less theater in Rochester than in Kansas City. So I would rather be here. But I also moved here because my best friends live here. So I have a connection to this place already.
Sure. Now, Nancy has lived all over the world, so I don't really know what to say.
It's very interesting because I was just thinking, I grew up in a town of 200 people in northern Indiana.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. And so I remember when I was in high school, and all of our field trips, especially the arts field trips, we would go to Chicago. And it was about a three-hour trip to Chicago. And my mother, every time she got that permission slip, she goes, "Well, why do you want to go there for?" I said, "Mother, it's not Macy." So there's got to be more than this provincial town. And I have been so blessed, and it was just a joy to go lots and lots of places. And not all over the world. It's a goal, but I just love people. I love finding new people. And when we travel, we try very diligently to not stay in the tourist places, but to meet people. I usually ask the maids off the record, "Where should I go to dinner?" "Well, you should go, you know, here and there." And I go, "No, where do you go to dinner?" So, yeah, I agree. Theater, you know, theater brings us all together. There's that one thing.
It certainly does. And your organization does that as well. The City Theater performance of The Glass Menagerie opens this Thursday, the 11th. The number to call for more information, 816-325-7367. The web address, citytheaterofindependence.org. I want to thank both of my guests for being here, C.C. McFarland, the director, and Nancy Eppert, who plays the role of Amanda in the Tennessee Williams classic, The Glass Menagerie, opening this Thursday, the 11th, at City Theater of Independence. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
After our break, when we return, we're going to talk about the latest show with the Kansas City Actors Theater coming up when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host, well into the new year now. Shows are lining up. We'll have interesting shows for you just about every week. Hopefully all year long, if the schedule works out the way it usually does. Opening up on this Wednesday, the 10th, for instance, at 7:30 p.m., our friends over at Kansas City Actors Theater will be presenting the show Sea Marks by Gardner McKay. And we have a nice little switch here from the previous show that Casey Actors Theater did, or one of the previous shows.
Not
too long ago.
Yeah, last KCAT show.
One of the featured actresses was Jan Rogge. Mm-hmm. Jan is here now as the director of the show. And Cinnamon Schultz is with us as well. She plays the role of Timothea in this show, and she was directing the previous show. So you're pulling a nice little switcheroo. Does Jan want to get even with Cinnamon?
Yes, exactly. I had to keep up. No, it was kind of unusual how I even ended up directing. Cinnamon wanted to do A Lie of the Mind for a long time. Mm-hmm. So she was booked for that. And we didn't have a director for C-Marks. And I reread the play, which I don't usually do, because I already read the play. And I just was so attracted to the storylines of the language, the romance, and sea stories. You know, I thought, boy, I'm just going to throw my hat in the ring and see if it sticks, and they all agreed, so it worked out really nice. I think it's a good fit. It's very challenging, as Cinnamon will tell you, doing a two-character show, which I did a three-character last year, My Old Lady. Two-character is much more, and rehearsing during the holidays.
Yes.
That's Christmas, that's New Year's. It's very distracting. The actors have to get on board immediately and try to get their lines down and have to work on the scene during the holidays. But in January, we are the first full production of 2018 that's up and running before any other theaters. So hopefully we'll get jump ahead with the audience.
You rehearsed during the holidays with this show as well.
Well, it's very unusual. I'm just saying that that's an odd. Usually you're performing it, or you're starting rehearsal a week after the holidays.
And of course, the crucial part of the football season was unfolding.
Yes!
As you were getting ready.
Yes! Well, now the Chiefs can go forward and the Green Bay Packers can die. They'll have to rework. Just fire their general manager.
We kid, Jan. Overall, the Packers have been more successful than the Chiefs have over the years. But the Green Bay Packers is actually, Jan is one of many owners of the Green Bay Packers. They're like a publicly traded organization.
Yeah, just a quick story. For the first time, we bought tickets to Lambeau Field. And that week, this was a couple months ago, Aaron Rodgers busted his collarbone a few days later. So I think we jinxed it.
No.
Next year we will not be going and watching it on TV, and hopefully the Packers will do much better.
Well, that can happen to anyone. I wouldn't accept the blame if I were you.
But I'm sorry, let me just say, so Cinnamon Schultz is playing Timothea. She's a publicist in Liverpool. This is set kind of basically late 1950s. And Darren Kennedy is playing an Irish fisherman from a remote island.
Jan has worked all over the country, maybe around the world, I don't know. Was it Cornell? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes, I worked at Cornell. Yeah, for a few
amongst
years.
Amongst other, on the West Coast, I remember you going to San Francisco for a while, hearing about
I kind of went all over. But no, I'm sorry, just to get back to it. So Darren Kennedy is playing Combe, who plays the Irish fisherman. So he's the other character in the play. Too bad he's not here today, but those are the two. But I don't know, can I ask Cinnamon, how is it being in the play, being with two, you know, it's been a while for a twofer.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've had the ability to it just being me and one other actor. And I have to admit, it's stressful, but also really great, because you get to concentrate on one relationship. Because usually your attention is divided on your relationship with many different characters and how does that culminate and everything. But being able to concentrate on just Darren's character, Combe, and myself as Timothea, and getting to see it from the beginning, the very beginning, from the minute that they realize their connection through letters, and expanding over a year and a half till they finally get to see each other face to face, and then how their relationship goes from there. It's quite a beautiful ability to explore this. And it's a nice romance with, like, everything thrown in there, both comedy, tragedy, I suppose. Yes, tragedy. But everything that goes with it. and it's just beautiful.
Romance ensues then.
Yes. It's interesting, too, because her character is a working woman, and she pretty much has kind of controls her relationship because this Irish fisherman from this remote island doesn't have a radio, has no electricity. Obviously, you know, just for kids nowadays to say there's no social media, it's all through, I call it slow love, you know, letter writing and getting to know each other. And because they built this foundation for a year and a half of writing to each other, the intensity of their relationship is that much more. Mm-hmm. And there's a tenderness about their relationship and a chemistry. It's just not erotic love, which so many of them are, and they dissipate so quickly. This is just much deeper and stronger, and the characters just reveal themselves, and it's just the two of them, and it's a fascinating story of this unusual man that she brings into her life. She's a divorced woman, so there's some complexities there, and he has not seen the world, and opposites attract. I think opposites inspire people, builds creativity, and I think is a great platform of a relationship that's exciting, you know. But because of all those things too, they can separate. And I think the story too is about a sense of place, where we choose to stay, who we fall behind. You know, with people nowadays, you know, people can live bi-coastal. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. I mean, you see on and on how it doesn't, you know.
Sure, and because of technology, people can work from anywhere, to be honest. And it's all about your position and your rise to that position, whereas this concentrates on kind of the fit of where you belong, I suppose, no matter how much you might be drawn to each other. And Colm, Darren's character, he's very withdrawn from all technology. I mean, they don't even have cars in his small village. But the letter writing back and forth, unlike texting, is not instantaneous. So there's that anticipation of waiting for that letter to come, and when it does come, you know, sitting with it for a while, and then the response that you get to give, and then waiting again. And there's a beauty about that, and there's also a beauty about all the words that are just written and spoken. It's just, especially I think for my character Timothea, working for a publishing house, the love of words in general, and I think that's another reason that she's so drawn to the honesty of Colm.
Your eyes just lit up as you described that. Do you work a lot of that into your character? Obviously, you love this way of doing things.
Yes, very much. Very much. I do. It's such a beautiful story. It's just gorgeous. And I think both for men and women to come see.
Yeah.
There's just so much in depth because it's two characters. You really get to know them.
Yeah.
And fall for them.
Yeah.
And they're
and root for them.
Yes, you want it to work for them. And I think that's what makes it such a beautiful story.
Well, things aren't always perfect, though.
No.
Obviously, things happen that are not so perfect.
Correct. And people sometimes have insurmountable differences that will pull them apart, too. And there's not much you can do about that, but that still doesn't change the way you feel about each other.
Yeah. Is it hard to do it with so small of a cast like that? Is that harder for you?
I think the difficulty in it is simply the amount of you don't get any breaks. But while you're in the midst of it, it doesn't seem like a problem, to be honest. The minute that Darren and I start working in a scene together, I don't think about how much time we spend on stage, and all the hard work I think that we've put in already through rehearsals pays off, and it doesn't seem like work anymore. So the memorization, the blocking, the dialect work, all of that, as long as we've done our homework, it's more just fun telling the story.
It's funny. Even the stage manager brought this up. It looks like a kind of a simple show. Girl meets boy, boy meets girl. They kind of get together. They're in one place. It's a much more complex show. and on every level, too. Acting-wise, even stage-wise, lighting, sound, because we're dealing with a year and a half of time sequence, how you deal with that. We're going to be at the stage tonight for the first time. We've been in a rehearsal hall. So it's an exciting part of the process that we're starting tonight with it. And we're actually going to have a dress change rehearsal. Just because they've got so many quick dress changes between scenes that you're like, I forgot about that.
Well, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah. But we have a great artistic staff, too. We got Gary Mosby, who's doing the set design. Jonathan Roberts, who's doing the sound. And, of course, Sarah Oliver, who's doing our costume design. So we have a really great crew, great design team set up.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be a beautiful play. And it's going to be closer to Valentine's.
Yay.
People have to come.
The run of the show will run that long. It opens Wednesday night, I should say, the 10th of January at 7:30 p.m. Essentially, it looks like three weeks run
yes,
here.
Yes, 3 weeks.
Including a special Monday night performance, which is rare.
Yeah, that's industry night, same time. It's always going to be at 7:30 at night. The only time there's a time change is their Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. So, and that would be the 22nd. And so please come on a Monday night if you can't make it the other nights.
Okay, yes. opens, of course, Wednesday night, the 10th at 7:30. Most of the performances I see here are at 7:30. The Sunday afternoon matinees are at 2. And essentially then a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday the next week, Saturday, Sunday. Then that Monday night performance, and then the final weekend, Wednesday the 24th, Thursday the 25th, the 26th, 27th, and wraps up with a matinee on Sunday afternoon the 28th at the City Stage Theater of Union Station. The number to call for more information, 816-235-6222. That is the central ticket office number, so be prepared to say you want to see the Actors Theater production of Seamarks by Gardner McKay, and the website as well, kcactors.org. Gardner McKay is he is quite a dashing person. kind of an Errol Flynn type.
Very much so.
Do you see him that way?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yes, she says yes.
Yes, he's he's my inspiration. He's my muse.
Was he a sailor?
Yes, he was a big sailor, and
was.
He also had a TV show that he got to sail these big boats, but he was also a Renaissance man. He was a poet. He was a sculptor. He has an exhibit, sculpture at the Whitney Museum in New York City, a novelist. He's wrote many other plays, so he's really done quite a bit. He just didn't want to be a good-looking actor, and that's what he was cast as, and he was like that. And he was a little wooden, wasn't a great actor, but he turned out to be, I think, a really marvelous writer, and it's too bad he died, I think, of just natural causes, but I think he just died, like, in his 60s.
Oh, my.
So it's just too bad, because I wish he could have written some more, you know?
Oh, sure. Yeah, do you think he was he in any way motivated by, was he a seaman?
He was. He ended up being a seaman, and he also went on the Amazon. He was a guy that liked to take risks and go on big trips, and his big thing, though, was sailing. He was a master seaman.
The kind of man that would sail around the world?
Yeah, and he really knew these characters from this is a really remote island. He really knew them. He knew how they talked. He knew how they thought. So he does a beautiful job. I really wish we could have done more. What's interesting is people that are a little bit older that have seen Missouri Rep's production of it in 1982 or 3. It's really a few years before I got here. But they did that one, and then they did his next show called Masters of the Sea, which is Calm back on the island with his set of characters that he kind of talks about. That he goes home.
Now, you have a fine leading man, of course, but do you project the personality of the playwright into this? Is there a connection there, do you think?
Well, I think that any playwright puts themselves in the play whether they mean to or not, simply through their personal experience, I suppose. I mean, I think Sam Shepard did that a lot with his plays. But yes, I definitely think this. I mean, you can tell how much the love of sea, of sailing, of the sea, the draw of the sea is in there. Not that he doesn't have a full fleshed out character for myself as well as Timothea, but there definitely is a complete theme of the love of that kind of sailing fisherman as a good, honest trade.
Yeah. His respect of the sea.
Yeah.
And how frightening and how alluring and how exciting and how it can change. He even mentions it depending on the sea, it depends on my own mood. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's the same thing, and it changes every day.
We really romanticize the sea.
We truly do.
Very much.
But what's really nice is it's romanticized in some of the language and poetry, but some of his stories, I mean, people die. Fishermen die all the time. And you get into the guts of some of that with about the fishermen that, yeah, we romanticize it, but when they're in it, it is pretty much life or death. It's a high
risk profession.
Yeah, very high risk.
I see. What year was it set in?
Well, they said somewhat not long ago. Oh, it was okay. Written. First production was 1981, so he wrote it like in the 1970s. But there's nothing modern about it, like it was set in the 70s or set, you know. So I just made it where it was post-World War II, where England is still.
See, it makes me wonder if Mr. McKay maybe wrote to lady friends in such a manner.
Yeah, I know. I wonder what his idea was. It, you know, he does have a website, and they still have his stuff in it, but why he... And I know the singer who writes about songs all the time, and he's got a real following.
I wish I could help. I don't know.
Irish music?
No, he doesn't do Irish. He does all Margaritaville.
Okay. Jimmy Buffett.
Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he wrote in one of his books, he wrote a dedication, you know, kind of thing with Jimmy Buffett. So they had a strong relationship.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is
that.
Kind of interesting because of the water thing.
I was just going to say that whole draw of the water.
Yeah.
there's something about that. Does the water make it more... You're a married woman, but does that make it more romantic for you?
I think so. I think also what makes it more romantic is the distance that they're coming together through, along with just the romanticism of letters. I think it's all highly romantic. How different they are, but yet how they connect. As a woman, I think it's great. I can't speak for men, but I would think that they would like it just as much.
I think her husband, Brian Paulette, also an actor here in town, I think you should go out and get a sailor suit right now.
I hope he heard that.
But I'll tell you, the play will not work if Cinnamon and Darren did not have a great chemistry on stage. It's just not going to work at its full potential, and they do, and it's beautiful.
That doesn't always happen.
No.
Sometimes you really have to work at it, as you know.
Yeah. Sometimes you just have to really...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Help me. No. It helps that Darren and I have known each other for a while.
Sure. Show opens Wednesday the 10th at 7:30 p.m. at City Stage Theater at Union Station. So the stage will be set into, I don't know, a ship, a port. How do you have it done, Jan?
No, not really. It's going to start off at a stone cottage when they're letter writing. But he eventually goes to her apartment in Liverpool. So the sea's in his memory. The sea's always around him thinking of it, but he's actually away from it. So
for quite a while.
He kind of becomes fonder of it, and he thinks about it. So,
how often do you get correspondence from him? When he's at sea, he can't just drop it in the post office.
No, he can't.
Seems like it's a week.
I was going to say the shortest amount of time is a week, and sometimes it goes a month or more. before we can hear from each other.
Well, sounds like a romantic time for mm-hmm. you. The way Cinnamon lit up. I can tell she's having a lot of fun with it.
Yes.
Sea Marks by Gardner McKay. And you've got to look up that picture of him. Looks like a young Errol Flynn. He really does. Yeah. We'll see about him. It then runs through Sunday the 28th. With performances quite often, so check their website, mm-hmm. kcactors.org. It's a City Stage Theater. All of the children's props and sets from Theater for Young America will be put away, and a fine mature romantic comedy will take place on the evenings as well. As the place magically performs, of course. I want to thank both of my guests for being with me today. It's lovely to sit across from both of these ladies. Jan Rogge is the director, often been a performer in shows mm-hmm. as well. And Cinnamon Schultz plays the role of Timothy, also been in many shows as well. As well as, and I have to say it, she probably hates my saying it, an Academy Award nominated motion picture, Witch's Bone.
That's right.
She was in that.
Tell people to check it out. It's a great movie.
It was a great movie.
Thank you.
Not everybody has seen it, even though it got such great reviews.
Those of us who know about it enjoyed it very much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you both very much for the Kansas City Actors Theater production of Sea Marks opens on Wednesday the 10th. Thanks so much for being with us. The Jazz Insider is next. He'll have some great jazz for you. We'll have jazz from 1 to 3. Then we'll pick up and have the blues from 3 to 6. The blues is also very romantic.
Yes, it is.
Right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that crossing the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.